Show. All right, everyone, welcome back to episode 152 of the 580 Show. Joined today by the first ever under 90 kg America's Strongest Man, Andrew Pepio. What's up, buddy?
What's up, man? How's it going?
Good. How's it feel? I mean, we're getting you right off the big win. So, you know, I'm happy you came on. I'm thankful for it. How do you feel?
I feel really good, man. Like, it's cool to say that, like, one, that you won. Like, obviously everyone loves winning and winning is a fun feeling, but to be like the first to win it, it's kind of one of those things that, like, no matter what I do from here on out, like, I can always say I won the inaugural 90 kilo ASM. Nice. Yeah, which is dope.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy. I met you for the first time this summer in Maryland. I mean, I may have been at shows with you, but our first time actually getting to meet. And it's crazy. I was looking through the roster and I didn't know a lot of the 200 guys. I knew you. We had talked about it a little bit on the podcast, but that is like, you're right. That's like such a cool title to hold. Because no matter what, you're the first ever to do it. So like, that's sick. So. How did the show go, I guess?
Yeah, man, procedurally, like, the show, I think, went really well. We get so accustomed to doing like 5-6 event shows in a day. And then when you bump up to that next level, then obviously it's like 2-3 day competitions. And especially for shows like OSG, like, you're rocking through, I don't know what, 300 athletes a day. So they end up still being kind of longer days. But I mean, this show, the way they split it up with AM and PM sessions, and then we were the 90s and the 64s in the morning. I think turnaround between events was maybe 20 to 30 minutes, depending, which felt really good. Like, it wasn't so much downtime that you kind of cooled all the way down and turned off, but it was enough to still get a good warm up in and feel ready for the next event. So I think, from an athlete standpoint, it went really well.
Yeah, we were talking about that last week, but that's kind of the cool thing with like a show like ASM or like how PSL does their shows, is you can have that focus on the athletes. Like, obviously this is the first 90 kg show, but it's not, you said it already, but it's not super long drawn out like nationals. I kind of don't like when people are like, oh, well, nationals or OSG or the USS National Strongman Corporation, whatever show it is super long, you know, and this show is not long, but like you said, it's 300, 400, USS National, 500 athletes, you know, whatever. But I'm sure on the other hand, like you mentioned, like, it is a really good feeling to go to a show and it run fast.
Right. It's
a whole different art of it. So you don't.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, there's
settle down. I don't know. You know?
Yeah. And I mean, it's one of those things where like, it's almost part of prepping for the show, knowing what you're getting into. Right. So for example, you go to USS Nats or you go to SC Nats and you know, you have those long downtimes. Like, that's part of the strategy of being a good strongman athlete. One, making sure like your conditioning is on point. Two, like, knowing your adrenal system. Are you going to stay up the entire like hour and a half, 2 hour turnaround? You know how to bring yourself down. And then being able to go from that to, you know, something like this or something like chaos or whatever, where you do have those quick 20 to 30 minute turnarounds. Okay, well, you don't have to worry so much about like, what are you doing to recover in those 2 hours? Is, did you train your conditioning properly and prep up to this? So you are able to have that quick turnaround without feeling gassed, you know?
Right. Yeah, it's a good point what you said about like your adrenaline, because I think that's, if someone's never done like a really long show, I think that's where a lot of people struggle with, is like staying up, you know. Yeah. It's funny, like, you know, you'll be like at a long show and it's like 9 a.m. and you're taking pre-workout, and then you don't do your last event like till like 7 p.m. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
You're 100% right. It's a skill set to know how to, adaptability, I think, is like the biggest skill set across the board in strongman, whether it's events, implements, timing, everything like that. And that's what I like about the sport. So,
yeah, I entirely agree. Like, I think one of the biggest lessons, right, one of the biggest takeaways that like strongman can reinforce and that you can garner from it as not just an athlete, but as an individual, is adaptability, right? Like, how good are you at being able to take what you know, see the changes on the spot, and then be able to adapt on the fly, right? In a way that's most efficient and effective for you. Like, it's cool that strongman's gotten so standardized to a degree. But ultimately, like, I think the sign of a good experienced veteran athlete is, how are you able to take your training? Something has changed on the day, right? So now you're no longer doing an Atlas stone. Now it's a sandbag, or now you're no longer doing Atlas stones. You're doing natural stones, or now it's not an axle, it's a log, right? Like, how experienced are you? How conditioned are you just to kind of understand the fundamentals of what this lift is supposed to be and then adapt the new circumstances to your skill set on the fly?
100%. Right?
And that's something that I've always appreciated about the sport, and that, like, training with my friends, working with my clients is something I've always, like, reinforced, is this sport is about adaptability. How good are you? How well are you able to take what you know and your strength and be able to kind of identify the problem in the moment and adapt?
For sure. That's really, really well said. And it's funny, like, how many times have you been at a show, whether it's local, competing or helping out, all the way to the top level, and you see people who can't handle a change, and they, you know, they may be stronger than you or I or someone else, but they just mentally shut down and let it bother them because there was a change. And it's like, hey, there's nothing you can do about it. It's affecting everyone. But it's you're 100% right, because you see it so much where people really do shut down and it affects them so, so drastically in a show. So
yeah, and it's one of the frustrating things too. And it's like, to a degree, you can kind of see one face of the coin, right? Where, like, especially if you look at nationals, people spend $200 to be there and have certain expectations, right? But in the same token, it's just like, this is what strongman is, right? Like, and I don't mean to say this to harken it back to, well, this is how it started, this is how it should be, but it was just, you showed up to a parking lot on a Saturday for a meet, you didn't know what you were doing, and you just figured it out as you went, right? Like, that's one of the core principles. So it's, like, frustrating to see, like, even in, like, you look at the comment threads for, like, nationals or bigger shows, right? Where all of a sudden there's a change made 3-4 weeks out, and then there's, like, half of the comments are people just throwing a hissy fit. And it's like, is it really all that different? Like, we can figure out how to still do this, and everyone's playing under the same rules. Like, it will be fine.
I've kind of done a 180 on it recently, where, like, I was kind of on the side of, like, standardization and – you know, everything had to be announced and perfect and everything. And I've kind of, like, recently just 180 degree flip, because you realize and remember, and you get quickly humbled how small and niche what we do is. Like, I don't, and that's okay. You can still love strongman. Like, I love it. I feel like as much as anyone. But it can also, like, mean a lot to you, but be super niche. Like, I just don't think people that love strongman understand how small a niche our community is, as big as we want it to be. And not saying it won't be big, but, like, I've just had, like, a, it's not the end of the world, like, come to Jesus moment with myself, you know, like, it's funny. So,
right. And it's hard, right? Like, you take this thing that, like, the people that do really love it, like, pour so much emotion and time and energy and effort and physicality into, right? Like, it's hard for those people to remove themselves from that big emotion that they've made for themselves and realize that, like, you can go into any gym and you still have to explain, like, oh yeah, I do the thing with the big rocks or pull a car. You know what I mean? Like, you have, like, everybody has that common experience of the barrier is, the big rocks. That's what I,
every person's, you like, know? Yeah, remember like Christmas Eve when you watched it with your family, when it was on ESPN, that's like what I do. You're 100%.
Right. Like,
so funny. You know, You're a good guy to ask this, because we got into it last week, and so there wasn't any prize money first U90. You did make money, but not from the organization, whatever.
But
I'd be curious, would you rather, and there's no right or wrong answer, but would you rather do a show and earn, like, a title that, like, America's Strongest Man Under 90, especially the first one, or do shows with prize money? Like, a local show and win $500. Like, I think that's I think it's a fair question. And we were just bullshitting about it last week, so I just figured, like, just ask you.
It's funny, because I just heard that episode last night and you guys were talking about it. I think we settled on, like, $500 or a nationals title.
Yeah.
I think is where y'all finished on it.
Right.
I think there's a sliding scale of athlete, right? Where you've been in the sport long enough, right? Like you've either accomplished titles or you kind of see the other side for people that have those titles, right? And you've been doing it long enough and you're like, well, I would like to start making money off of it, right?
Yeah.
It's tough. I think for
Yeah.
me, I think right now where I'm at, any day of the week, I would take an OSG title over $500, over
For
$1,000.
sure. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, the topic we were talking about was a little different. It was more like I used the example of like our summer show, and it's a bigger show, like over 100 people. And would you trade an Arnold invitation for $1,000 if you win? And it's like, I don't know, because is the experience that you want at the Arnold, I'm starting to get to the point where it's like, $1,000, that may change someone's life or mean a lot to someone. But for, I'm not trying to downplay money, but like for me, I like the experience of getting to go like to OSG or the Arnold or Nationals, and I'd rather go and do that. And that's me personally. But I put the, if we have new listeners listening this week, comment like, what would you rather do? And you're 100% right though, because there are levels to it. So it's very individualized.
And I mean, yeah, and I think for my first Arnold experience, I would hands down take going to the Arnold over $1,000. Like when I coming up in my gym, I think I started training strongman back in 2013, 2014. I did my first show in the winter of 2015, I think December. And the people that I was training around were kind of part of like an old guard, so to say, right? Where this was all pre-OSG, like Arnold was the Arnold. That was it. For you to be the best in the world, you had to win the Arnold. So like I grew up in the sport around this prestige of the pinnacle of the sport, right? And so when I first went to compete at the Arnold was 2022, I think, when we were still like when we were on the big stage with the pros and like that back corner in the Arnold, right? And that was like, yep, this checks that box. This is kind of what I thought it was, right? And now to where it's gone to, right? Where like I went last year to hang out with and help coach my buddy Alec Patron and hang out with Cody Abel, right? And I was like hyping Alec up. I was like, dude, it's on a big stage. You're in the back. There's a whole light show. And then it was like this square corner of the convention hall. So it's now, and like it's weird trying to weigh like, okay, $1,000 over, okay, this experience that like where I came from was just this pinnacle of the sport, right? And then when I went, it followed through and consistent with that. And now it's like, well, it's fun to go. I'm gonna go this year. Like, I just got a qualifier from ASM. I'm gonna go because I want to win the Arnold and like check that box for the title. But also, like, $1,000 is not bad. You know what I mean? To help kind of start get like garnering some money in the sport, right? And start kind of getting something back from it. It's hard. Like I very much grateful for like the opportunities that are afforded and starting to be afforded to more weight class athletes, right? So we now have a class at the Arnold, right? And like when I went, I was in a combined 105 class, so I was one of the lighter guys with CJ.
I think that's one of the best decisions they made, was making the 200 guys their own class.
Yeah,
It never really made
100%, because
sense to me. Like my first ever nationals I was at, it was like, I think the first one I was at, like CJ Pierce dominated the under 200, but then he only gets like seventh place. You know what I mean? Because he's going against, whatever. So
the
I love that
105s.
there's no subclasses anymore. This doesn't make much sense. But yeah.
And like it kind of started as this idea, like it would have felt like was that 90s were an afterthought, right? Because we had such this big weight spread. And now, okay, cool. Well, now there's this group of athletes that we can afford to put in this subclass. And it's like, well, okay, now they're actually really good. And it's not fair that they're getting compared against this other weight class when they're like doing what they're doing. So let's give them their own class now. And it feels like almost this very slow trickle effect of an afterthought. Like the 90s are kind of, and weight classes are getting dragged along with everything else. And you know, like I was saying, like I'm grateful for the opportunity to compete at higher level shows and like go to OSG and Chaos and do ASM. And to OSG and Chaos's credit, like they paid out the podium. Whereas now, like at ASM, we have CJ and the community like crowdfunding, right?
Right.
Which super grateful to him. CJ is a good friend of mine, and everyone else that chipped in and donated, like that's huge. That's cool to see. However, it's just kind of one of those things where it's like there's three of the four weight classes there that are getting paid that have pro cards, right?
Right.
So
yeah,
at some point, like the rationale doesn't stand for, can we get something? Can we get a pro
yeah,
card? We don't need $25,000, but
yeah, that's okay. So that's where it's like, I think people get like, cause it's not like, $25,000 to almost anyone. I mean, literally almost anyone is life-changing
yeah.
money.
Yeah.
You know, where it's going to maybe not life-changing, but it's going to make a huge impact on your life. And to see that
oh, yeah.
big of a payout go out, and then it's like, oh, you can't like $5,000, $1,000, whatever to pay the 200s.
Yeah.
I know it's their first time. The thing that I get in a big argument with people about is everyone says people pay to watch the heavyweights. People pay to watch heavyweights. People what? And that phrase is just so reiterated, but there's no data to support that. And I understand,
at
but like,
all.
Do you really think there's more like moms and dads? Like Strongman edits, I think like pay-per-view and spectators are just literally bodies. Like,
yeah.
To me, like when we host shows, the open heavyweight guys have the same amount of support as the novice women. Sometimes the novice women have more because they have more moms and dads and aunts and uncles coming to watch. So I don't know. Like, yeah, I think the open heavyweight should be paid more. And yeah, like right now, because it's just, that's the way the sport's been. But I just, people say that and there is zero data to support that. Like that's.
Yeah. And that, you're absolutely right. Like, and it's one of those things where I'm like, the argument doesn't need to be, well, we need to take from someone else's plate to get the 90s paid. Absolutely not.
Right,
like
100%.
The open class is where the sport originated, and it's partially what's continuing to drive the sport forward, because that's what people traditionally getting into the sport think of strongman, right? However, from if you look at it from like a consumer base, right, there are more people in this world that are more similar to like 90 and 80 kilo guys, right? And like your 64 women, right? So it makes sense that you are going to get a larger swath of the population involved if you broadcast people that are similar to those people more, right?
100%.
Like
it's a little bit of a reach comparison, but CrossFit, you know, the average guy at CrossFit's, you know, 180 to 200 pounds.
Yeah.
Some guys are heavier, some guys are lighter, but they've made more money than in the last 10 years than strongman will ever make in its existence of being a sport.
Yeah.
So
like Mitchell Hooper getting $146,000 for winning the Rogue Invitational
crazy
is massive. That is a very solid year of work that that man now no longer has to do and live comfortably and just train, you know?
It's mind blowing that, yeah, I don't know, man. It's, I say it, I feel like I say it every freaking episode we've ever recorded, but it's really annoying to me the people that talk crap on CrossFit, because Rogue was just able to give one strongman $150,000 for one show, you know, because so no, I don't know. What's your opinion on a pro card system in America?
I think the pro system probably needs to be revamped from where it stands right now, right? Because ultimately it feels almost like the, at least for non-open guys, it feels like the death of competition in your weight class, right?
I'm so happy you said that. I'm so happy.
Yeah.
Because everyone, you know, says we need a pro card. Like for me, like at Nationals last year, if we had a pro card, I would have won my pro card at Nationals last year. And I would hate that, because I wouldn't be able to jump into a, like, I guess I could go up and I probably would go up, but like, I don't like being handcuffed to have to do, you know, certain things. I don't think people realize that is like, okay, say you and I both get our pro card as U90s, right? Now we are severely handcuffed in what we can do in America. And it goes back to what I was saying. Like, it's a small niche thing. and it's supposed to be fun. We all started it because it was fun. And then it's like, oh, well, you can't do literally like any, like you wouldn't have been able to do Maryland's Strongest Man this year. You wouldn't have been able, like stuff. Like I like jumping into Ohio's Strongest Man almost every year because it's close to my house and it's fun and it's easy for me to just show up and have fun competing. I would no longer be able to do that. Like, that's why I'm like a big fan, and I don't really know how to revamp it. So I guess I'm just one of those guys complaining without, you know, but I
get the conversation started
for sure. I just think treating top level athletes like pros is the way to go. Like,
yeah,
I don't really need to be called a pro, just like bigger shows like OSG or Chaos. And I think a lot, they are starting to do a better job. Treat them like a pro, you know, and I think that's the way to do it. But
no, I mean, I totally agree, because like I got a good buddy of mine that was one of the, like, part of the old guard that I was mentioning at like my gym when I was growing up, is this dude, Andy Deck, right? Mm-hmm. He was one of like the OG pros. And then as soon as he got his pro card, I think he maybe did one or two pro shows, but because they were so few and far between, like he either stopped competing or he just danced around different weight classes just to have fun, you know? And so I think like, yeah, I would love the title of pro. That seems cool. And it seems like you're getting something for all of the effort that you've put into the sport to make it feel like it means something more, right? And it really only needs to mean as much as you want it to mean. But then the next step needs to be something along the lines of, okay, well, you've gotten pro. Here is what this means for you. We now have 10 different opportunities for pro shows throughout the year, in which case you get a free invite. There's money on the line, and there's invites to bigger shows overseas or something along those lines, right? Where there's a very obvious pathway and reward system for all of the work that's been put in.
Right. Yeah. It's, you like, know, and yeah, it's funny. Cause like you look at like Evan Singleton isn't a pro technically.
Yeah.
Like that's just actually funny. Like that, you know, like some of the top 105 guys that are coming top five at OSG, they're not pros in America. Yeah. Nick Hines, not a pro. No. And that's just because he never had Strongman Corporation shows around him. He was more USS, and that's just how his path was. So, but those guys are pros, and everyone knows it. You know what I mean? So,
right, yeah, and that's also like, and that's funny because I have this conversation with my dad, right? And he spent his entire career being like a tennis pro. He's a tennis professional. Oh, wow. He was a head coach, right?
Cool.
Yeah. So, I have this conversation with him like once or twice a year where he's like, okay, but so if you did well in this federation, what does this get you to? And what does this mean for this one? And is OSG related to that? And the show you did in England, how does that play in? And I have to explain to him like, okay, well, there's not a pro system, but I also won money at this show. And also I got invited to this one, but I'm also not a pro in any of these. And he was like, there needs to be some kind of unifying something. I don't know, but this doesn't make sense to like a casual viewer.
Yeah, well, that's 100% right. There needs to be some sort of like unification, like with all of it. But who knows if that'll ever happen? It's so funny because like it sounds just like my dad. My dad's not a pro in anything, but just it's funny hearing like dads and moms and stuff say all the buzzwords like OSG, Arnold, National. Like they just kind of like slowly pick up with it. It's so funny to drag casuals like into this mess that we take really serious. But no, that was something that was on my mind with the U9, like with the pro card system, because it's a comment we get a lot on YouTube where, well, this needs to be a pro card. And
And it's like, it's tough, right? Because like we have all these buzzwords, right? And we have all these things that we think mean things, but like a lot of the people, not all of the people, but I think like a lot of the people that start throwing these around, like don't take it the next step further and think, okay, but what does that actually mean for me as an athlete or everyone else as an athlete, right? Like, that's cool. We need the sport to keep being driven forward with these conversations. And okay, cool. What's the next step that we can do to treat them like professionals, like you said, right? But is that infrastructure in place to support that happening now? If it's not, why not? What does that look like? And how do we get that to continue happening? Instead of like, and this is something that like stresses me out to no end. And I do not understand, because I heard it once or twice this weekend too, is like, especially in the conversation of like getting paid at shows, right? Where people are just like, no, it's just a hobby for me. I don't need to get paid. Right. Well, it's like, Well, football and soccer and baseball and basketball was all just a hobby to somebody a long time ago, right? Like, we're all fooling ourselves if we think that we would just turn away from the opportunity to do this professionally as a career, right? All of us
Right.
would love to just train and eat and recover and compete all year round and not have to work day jobs because we're getting paid to do it professionally, right? And I think to a degree, like, it's just this weird, like, gatekeepy appeasement to federations. I don't know. I don't know if I'm
Yeah,
going off the
no,
rails a little bit.
I
You know what
get
I
it.
mean? Where it's just like,
Yeah.
we need to keep pushing forward. Like, we're cool that we're getting some of these things now, but like, it needs to continuously be challenged to get weight class athletes treated like professionals, like the opens, you know?
Right. You know, I think a good next step, like not huge prize money, would be being able to lower entry fee or eliminate it for like a big show like OSG. And I get it, like it's the entries from the athletes is essentially what pays it out. Like Strongman is still like very not like sufficient on sponsors and like big dollar sponsors and stuff like that. But like it would be I think that's like the next feasible step in the plan is like, hey, you qualify for OSG, you're one of the top 30 in the world in your class. All you have to do is just come here and like stay. But like you don't have to pay $300 to compete. Like I think that's a good next step, but
No, I agree. And to Strongman Corporation's credit, like, there was no entry fee for ASM, which I thought was dope. That's one of the first shows where right out of the gate it was just, hey, no entry fee.
right.
And that kind of felt like a move towards something that was professional. OSG in 22 last year, I want to say the podium for regionals had their entry fee waived. Or no, they had $200 taken off, but I think the price jumped to like 280. So you instead of paying 280, you were paying 80.
Yeah.
And then the first place winner got a $500 travel stipend
That's
to help
cool.
reimburse for it, which was great. But I agree. I think, like, okay, let's make the attrition through the online qualifier a little bit more stiff. Let's maybe not take as many people in so that way we can afford the cost of, hey, people can get there for free now, you
Yeah,
know? But
for
I
sure.
agree. I think it's, we need, as much as people want to rage against it stupidly, model it after CrossFit the best that we can. Like, they killed it in sponsorships. Like, you have
Right.
Reebok involved, you have Rogue involved, and they have these massive, big money, big ticket
Huge.
sponsors that afford all these things.
Right. Yeah. No, there's a lot to still be fixed. It's all, I mean, but like the last thing I'll say too that I think a lot of people need to hear is, you know, as a competitor in Strongman, you are the consumer, like you're not only the consumer, but you're the money that's coming in. Like you're the so your voice does matter. And I think I definitely think there's constructive ways to go about it. You don't have to be a dick. You don't have to even name people. You don't have to name just, hey, I was at this show this weekend. This could have been done a little. I still had a great time, but this could have been done better. And maybe that promoter or whoever will take that to heart, hopefully in a positive way, and do it better the next time. And I think that's every single person, if they took that responsibility, I think everyone would be surprised how much it would improve very quickly because.
Yeah, I 1,000% agree. Like, I think there's a couple, like, there's like an intersection of just weird factors involved, right? So, like, I think you have people that are either casual viewers of the live stream, or were there and then just want to throw a hissy fit, but then they get behind like social media, right? And then they start just copping off, man, and just saying all kinds of crazy, excuse
Right.
me, crazy things that might have been valid issues, but because they just feel so spurned to say it any which way, they
Yeah.
don't treat it like a professional, constructive conversation, right? Which is, again, what you said, as a consumer, we should be part of this conversation and part of this interaction. There is a professional way to go about voicing like concerns, displeasure, or whatever to move things forward. After chaos, like, we all went out to one of the local pubs and we all sat down with Luke, and Luke was like invested in asking general questions about what did we like, what didn't we like. And we had like a bunch of athletes, and him and I like had this really constructive conversation about what we thought needed to be improved, if anything, and what we liked, and all of these things. And I think you're 100% right. Like, we are the consumer, right? And we are the ones that are sending these federations all of our money to be a part of it. But we're also like half of the business, right? At least more than half of the business, right? And if we want our points to be heard for things that we think need to drive the competitions to be better or the sport to be better or better opportunities, we need to be adults about it
For
and
sure.
figure out how to professionally express our concerns.
Yeah, that's the internet. Like, people just are very confident to say whatever they want on the internet. And it sucks. And, you know, Frawley, my buddy Frawley, he's on this podcast, and he had a really good point too. Is like, it is like the silent minority or the loud minority that speaks up.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it may be five people like going crazy, but actually like the other 95% are like, oh, that was, you know, so you
right.
only hear, and see the bad stuff, but yeah. Right.
But that's the part that obviously drowns out the rest of it. You know what I mean? And then you see like, and then you see people that are like higher up in the federations have appropriate reactions to some of these things, right? Where they kind of lash out a little bit.
Right.
And then for everyone else, it's just kind of like, well, I don't really feel like actually voicing this because I'm either going to get blacklisted or I'm just not interested in being involved in this interaction.
No, you know? that's a good point, because like, I wish it was somewhere and everyone would go to the middle and like, you know, you didn't have to like, have 99% of people stay silent and then 1% like be outraged. Like, see, like CJ Krause, like, dude, props to him, what he did, raised a ton of money, but like, he had to like really go almost unhinged and raise all this money, which is awesome. But it's like, he's just out there on his own. I think if everyone would speak up and voice their opinions in a reasonable and respectable and feasible way, he wouldn't have to do that. You know, but props to him for doing that. You know what I mean?
No, 100%.
No, but yeah, that's enough bitching for today about that stuff, I guess. What's let's talk about Rise and Defy a little bit, because so are you the head coach there? Do you coach on, like, how does that work? I always see it with Alex, so I was curious. I want you to talk about your coach.
So Rise and Defy is actually my best friend Jordan Roscoe's coaching business, right? So he's been coaching me since 2019. Got me through my first two SC Nationals, got me to top five in the nation, OSG. All the cool things that I've done that people probably know me for now has been a result of his coaching. Before I started working with him, I was running some strongman classes at my gym, and then in the last 4 or 5 years, just kind of lessons I've learned from him and his mentoring, I picked up my own clients, and so I'm working with him under that brand, coaching. And then there's Alec, who's obviously involved with that as well. There's my friend Brandon McNamara, who went to Chaos with me to compete. Unfortunately, he got injured in the first event, so he couldn't do all the cool stuff he planned on doing. And then he has like 40 plus clients, but strongman is
I was just, because I always see you guys post about it and I didn't really know. Yeah, that's cool. You know what's funny about Brandon is I randomly trained with him one time, like,
no way,
3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah,
like I think this is pre-COVID, I'm pretty sure, but I traveled to Midland, Texas for work sometimes. And if you know, like, West Texas, there's nothing there. So I put on either Starting Strongman or Texas Strongman. I was like, hey, is there any gyms? And there was a gym like 3.5 hours away. And I drove on a Saturday, and him and I just trained together one random Saturday. I never talked to him again. But
that's so funny. It's
hilarious that you just mentioned him, because I remember, like, I went to a random strongman gym. Like, Texas is fucked up. Everything's so far away. They're like,
that's what I hear.
Like, you'll post in Texas Strongman has a really good Facebook group for if anyone ever travels there. That's why I started one for PA, because I saw how cool it was. But the state's so big, you'll be like, hey, I'm here, where's my nearest strongman gym? And they'll be like, oh, this isn't too far.
5 hours away.
Yeah, you put in your maps and you're like, it's 4.5 hours away. So that's
let me just book an Airbnb real quick.
Yeah. No, that's cool. You guys seem like you have a really good, like, kind of team there, and that's really cool. So your coaching, you kind of grew organically.
Yeah. So like I said, I've kind of been not stuck with. I've grown up in the same gym since like 2014.
And
so
what gym is that?
21. It's Brute Strength Gym.
Oh. Okay. So there,
just
that's
unfortunately.
What, yeah. Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. So I've been consistent there for 9, 10 years now. And so, like, just a lot of people that have kind of seen me grow up through strongman, people that have come in, people that have like come to the gym because of things I've done recently. And I was kind of hesitant to start coaching first. My first one-on-one client was my buddy Joseph Navarra, who came to me because he wanted to get better at Atlas stones. He just loved the stone portion of strongman, and then saw everything else that was happening, and then it kind of went from there. And then in the last year or two, I've started opening it up to have like online clients and programming and in person and all of this stuff. And it's again mostly just kind of crowdsourced from people that know me personally in the gym that I've worked with in other capacities. So it's been pretty neat so far.
Let me ask you a question. Do you find like, so I've coached for a while, like kind of just indirectly, like through, I coach some kids, but in strongman, just because like I'm training and people are around me and want to get better and we kind of train together. And we're just like, I tell people, I'm like, you're going to be my gerbil. I'm going to try this on you. And that's going to be it. And I've kind of organically picked up people. Like, I don't really promote my coaching because I have enough people. But do you find it difficult with online coaching? Like, sometimes?
A little bit. I have a couple clients that are really good about just asking the questions they need to and then sending me videos on time and like proper communication. I have a couple other people that have come from different coaches or different circumstances that like just aren't quite quick to the like, hey, I need to send you videos of everything that I do or what I ask. And I typically have a policy, especially if they're just getting into strongman, that I work with them in person first.
Okay, that's
Just so I
cool.
can be real hands-on with what they're doing. I don't want to set them up with something and then, you know, they hurt themselves on a log press because they fall backwards not knowing how to clean it. You know what I mean? But you know, I try to.
Yeah, it's just you said it kind of like I kind of realized quickly like you I've taken for granted because of the people I've been around how much people knew, you know, like, and then you get like base really new people and it's a whole new learning curve and people are just not update. It's kind of sad to see the coaches. I'll never mention a coaches, but like people have come from other coaches, really big names, people I've never heard of, and everything in between, but their expectations are so low. It's kind of sad. They'll be like, oh yeah, my coach left me on read for 3 weeks. Be like, that's crazy. So it's like this is why I asked, because I've been getting more into the online and it's been a learning experience for me personally. That's why you said it just kind of made me think about it.
Yeah, no,
What?
for sure. And like, go
No,
ahead.
go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, you're all good. And obviously, like, we have a certain level of passion for the sport, right? That we really like, it's almost you to a degree have to temper like how involved you are, right? And it's something that actually I've been had a few conversations with my buddy Jordan of Rising to Five about a few times is mitigating your own expectations and meeting your athlete where they're at, right? Because you can't want it more than they want it. You can't want more for them than they want, right? So just as a healthy coaching balance is. And so trying to like be better about mitigating that, right? And you're right, it is funny, right? Like we obviously are so involved and we've been doing this for so long that like things like bracing or just like setting up evenly on the bar and knowing like how to set your hands on knurling so it's even and feeling the bar on your back and things like that, right? Are just so like third, fourth, fifth nature to us that like you almost forget that this is something you have to teach, right? Like I coach a couple 14-year-old kids. They kind of like you started wanting to work with me because they saw some of the strongman stuff I was doing in the gym. And it was very much like that first lesson was a little bit of a learning curve on the first day we were working together, being like, okay, right, you're like 14 first off, but then you're also new to this, right? So like, let's take it all the way back and we're going to run our ABCs. Like, this is how you jump. This is how you walk. This is what a barbell is. You know what I mean? And just that little bit of a learning curve of going from being like a high functioning athlete to how do I teach someone that's entirely new to this, you know?
No, that's a great point. What about brute strength? Like, where's your guys' most next near strongman gym? Is there one? I'm not too familiar with Virginia, but I mean, that's first off, I'm like super sad to hear about that because that's been a gym I've heard of since I first started in strongman. You know, everyone talks about how good their comps they run are, and you know, so much so. You know, my heart breaks for the owners, you know, that stinks. And everyone involved like yourself, that's crazy. You've been going to that gym for 10 years.
Yeah, so like
That's nuts.
when they made the announcement, me and a couple friends were talking about it, and it like it's weirdly enough, because if you're in it, like you're in a gym and you're in a training center for long enough, you get it. But it almost feels like the death of a friend, right?
For
Where
sure.
like I went through my entire 20s there. Like everything, like a lot of the things that I am now and that I'm proud of is because of what I've learned there, what I've done there, and the people that I've met there that have guided me to where I'm at now. And it's just weird to see like how that's going to change, and that's kind of going to be like a pretty big void in the area. Like that was like regaled as like the East Coast Mecca of like
Yeah.
strongman, right? There was almost never like a lack of want at that gym for anything that you needed. Like have like a whole built-in power stairs. You have tires from 200 pounds up to like 1200 pounds. You have every like iteration of a weird anchor chain you could find. You've got all kinds of grip stuff to train with. Different like finger fingers. Like you can't just go to a gym and they've got like four different ranges of finger fingers and Atlas stones up to like 500 pounds. You know what I mean?
Right.
So fortunately, like I say fortunately, but for me, like I've been doing this long enough, I know how to modify stuff. And I live in an area that is pretty saturated with strength gyms and training facilities. So there are a couple options in the area. I've got a lot of equipment at that gym that I'm probably going to take with me and my buddy Brandon to a storage unit and just kind of keep in
Yeah.
the time. I kind of split time and train at another gym in the area called Iron Asylum. That has some pretty good starter strongman equipment. Like they've got logs and axles and yokes and farmers and things. But
Yeah.
so it's kind of like a play and modify game and do what I can when I can game in the
Right.
meantime.
Yeah. No, I didn't know, I did forgot you even trained at that gym. That sucks. But yeah. Well, man, that's I appreciate you coming on. Your Instagram name will be at the bottom of the screen for anyone watching on YouTube, but make sure you guys are following Andrew. And if you're interested in coaching, you know he's obviously available. So, man, thank you so much. Congratulations on the huge win. That's
Yeah,
awesome.
thank you very much, man. I appreciate
Yeah.
that. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.